At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report, a Tuesday show, and we have got a Tuesday treat for you. Joining us once again, Senator Nina Turner. Nina, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here with you, John, always.
We're glad to have you here, and you being here, that's the major treat. That's 99.99% of the treat, but we have one extra 0.01%, and that is that some watching on our YouTube channel right now, but I've already noticed that we have a Nina Turner emoji. And Nina, is the funniest thing. Someone on the chat in the pre-show was like, there should be a Nina Turner emoji. And so I said, there should be. And so I typed into our Slack, can we get like a zoom in of that awesome superhero image of her? And they were like, it's already up. We put it up this morning. And I looked and it was exactly what we wanted. And now it's there. So that's awesome.
That is awesome. I'm excited about that.
I love that like comic book depiction of you. That is cooler than any image of me that has ever been taken or drawn or hypothesized or will ever be.
I love it too. To be immortalized in that way is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Exactly. And you know, hopefully a show will be forthcoming on Disney Plus in the next couple of years. Anyway, the power, it's gonna be great. Moon Knight will have a small supporting role. Anyway, Nina, we're always glad to have you here. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Like this is like one of the most packed rundowns ever. We're gonna be talking about everything from vaccination to affirmative action to the war in Iraq to qualified immunity to racially discriminatory gerrymandering to like everything that you can imagine. And that's gonna be very exciting. But before we get to that, Nina Turner, you were on CNN this morning, were you not?
I was.
You were, and you talked about sort of the different factions in this infrastructure fight, and you talked about Bernie Sanders and his pressure that he put on Joe Manchin. Now, I and many others have been just desperately calling on anyone in a position of power to actually pressure Manchin and Sinema and the others, and so Bernie finally did it. What did CNN think about that? Were they in favor of that?
It was a great discussion this morning, I must admit. And shortly after me, two Congress people were on. It was Congresswoman Bush and a Congressman Bowman. And like different segments did not know they were gonna have on so many progressives this morning. It was a really robust conversation. And what I laid out, because Paul Begala was the other person on there, and the one thing that he and I did agree on is that the Democrats must do something. So that's a start. We did agree on that. I argued that $3.5 trillion investment is already the compromise position. He argued that something must be done and that the 3.5 combined with some other monies will make this the biggest investment since Reagan, I believe he said. The point of the matter is this, I don't understand why we're compromising on the compromise, on the compromise, on the compromise. My major point is that 6.6 trillion was the starting number. Some progressives, John, as you remember, wanted 10. So we go from people flirting, throwing out 10 to, okay, it's gonna be 6, now to 3.5. And now you have corporatists, more moderate Democrats, even trying to negotiate down from there. Let us not forget that both caucuses in both chambers, the caucuses in both chambers being the Democratic caucuses, agree. Everybody agrees except for two senators. The people in this country agree, no matter what their political ideologies are, they say they rocking with the Build Back Better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Well, John, my question is, maybe you can help me with this. If the president wants it, if the caucuses in the Congress want it, if the American people say we rocking with you, then what could be the problem?
There are several problems, but one that I think we should focus on is that unless you've been holding out on me, I suspect that you probably don't own a coal company. Do you own a coal company?
No, I do.
Well, then if you don't own a coal company, then how could you understand the concerns of coal barons? But really, like,
that's what it is. Thank you.
I'm not a serious person. I'm not a responsible person. That's why no one respects me. I've never held elected office. You're a serious person. That's why we have you on. So I can say crazy things like, if it's about $150 billion to incentivize power plants to not use coal, and a senator says no to it, the country doesn't get to have that, and he owns a coal company, I can't think past, okay, Biden sits down with him, says, here's the thing, you're part of our party, you are going to sell your coal company, you're going to divest yourself entirely from fossil fuels, or we're going to boot you from the goddamn party. Because that is the most obvious corruption. Like, layered on top of it is the frosting of the fact that he's gotten $400,000 from fossil fuel companies in the last quarter alone. That's the sort of normal corruption that we've just sort of normalized, that we just totally allow it. He owns a coal company and he's deciding whether we'll keep using coal or not. Boot him out of the party. How can it be allowed? It is so offensively corrupt. And nobody really talks about it except a couple of progressives. That's it. The news barely cares that that exists. I mean, how could you possibly imply that he would do something that would hurt a company that has gained him $5 million in the past few years? It's madness, Nina.
It is, and his family. You know, and as I said on New Day this morning, and like I said, very good conversation with Brianna. He is set for the rest of his natural life. His children are set for the rest of their natural lives, and so on and so forth. So why would he care about West Virginia, one of the poorest states in the nation, I add, about people in communities there suffering and their children not being set? Why does he care? He doesn't care about the implosion of Mother Earth. He just doesn't. And so, John, your point is well taken. Why do we put up with this? The rules need to change. And in order for the rules to change, you got to elect people who are willing to change the rules. One of the other things that Paul said in our robust conversation this morning is that Senator Manchin is the only Democrat that could get elected in West Virginia. Well, you know why? Because he ain't really a Democrat. Let's just go and tell that kind of truth. Because President Biden should move the West Wing to West Virginia and let Senator Joe Manchin know he's tired of playing games. He'd have met with the Manchin. I mean, how many more conversations? Senator Sanders and him just had a conversation. Thank God Senator Sanders smoked him out. And you're absolutely right. Those other senators, the 48 others, because we got another one we need to bring out here, and that's Senator Sinema. West Wing in West Virginia, let Senator Sinema know I'll be in Arizona directly. Like, I'm coming to a town near you right away. But no, they're not doing that because too many of their friends and frenemies are entangled in the same owner-donor situation. And so yet again, the American people lose or have to take crumbs from the table. They just increased, the Senate just voted in the defense bill, the spending bill, to give the Pentagon $10 billion more dollars than what they asked for, John.
Yeah,
I need somebody to help us understand this.
Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna set up a segment of the Department of Defense, which is defense against the apocalyptic danger of climate change. And then we'll put all that money into the defense budget and suddenly it'll be totally cool. Let's just do that then. My God, like we will spend $1 trillion a year to stop like a dude in Chile from shooting you, but like Miami being swept out to the middle of the Atlantic, is it really a priority? Is that really something we need to defend against? We're the dumbest country.
And West Virginia, I mean, they're dealing with flooding too, John. Yeah. And West Virginia.
We talked about on the show yesterday. Yeah.
So, it's really going to take the American people to rise up and say enough is enough. And that, in the words of Fannie Lou Hamer, we sick and tired of being sick and tired. We just got to stop taking this and stop normalizing this foolishness.
100%. Oh yeah, everyone go see the video of Nina on that. It's awesome. Okay. That's not even on our rundown. We got so much we gotta talk about. So we're about
you
to launch
added
into it.
More to the rundown, John.
Exactly.
You've running down a lot today.
Because you're on and I just want to talk about everything with you. We're gonna launch into this thing. We got a couple different aspects we gotta talk about. I apologize. I'm gonna make you look at Tucker Carlson's stupid face, but here we go.
It's been going on for a long time, but it never needed to happen. There's no inherent reason that a virus should rip apart the United States. COVID easily could have brought us together. Shared suffering often does that. 9/11 did that. And yet from the very beginning, demagogues like Joe Biden and many others have used this virus as a hammer to smash the bonds that connect Americans to one another.
That is the most, you might think I'm gonna say unintentionally revealing thing ever. He just said the thing that Fox is doing and has done. Yes, there's no reason we should have been divided over COVID. Shared suffering does often bring people together, but demagogues have used it as a hammer to smash the bonds that tie us. But it's not unintentional that he said that. He said it intentionally. He knows exactly that that's what they did. He relishes in turning reality on its head and using it to drive us mad and, you know, drive his viewers into a lull where they expect nothing from government except demagoguery like that. But Tucker Carlson's commentary on COVID actually got even worse because he decided to use the death of Colin Powell to push people to be scared of getting vaccinated, to think that there's no point, as you'll see in this clip.
Like almost everyone his age, Colin Powell was fully vaccinated against COVID. And yet, according to his family and doctors, Colin Powell died of COVID. Of course, that fact does not make his death any less sad, nor is it unusual. Many thousands of vaccinated Americans have died of COVID. Former CDC Director Robert Redfield announced just today that about 40% of all recent COVID deaths in the state of Maryland, for example, are among those who have had both shots. So what does that tell you exactly? Well, it tells you you've been lied to. Vaccines may be highly useful for some people, but across a population, they do not solve COVID. That's not speculation. It is an observable fact. People who've been fully vaccinated can still get the virus, they can still transmit the virus to others, and they can still die from COVID. Colin Powell is hardly the only example of that. So the question is, why are they telling us otherwise? And the answer is simple. They're telling us that to divide us from each other.
Okay, he can't even read off the teleprompter properly. But anyway, so he just said all that stuff. Notably, he left something out, which we'll turn to in just a sec about Colin Powell. He said, they can get sick, they can die. Why is everyone lying to you about that? Nina, what is he? I mean, we know that he's lying right there, but nobody's ever said that you can't get sick, you can't die. No one has ever said that it's perfect protection. That's not true. This is the most ridiculous straw man and it's gonna get people killed.
That's right. I mean, it decreases the likelihood and all, we got to do a whole bunch of things together to try to tame COVID. That's washing your hands, washing surfaces that are used regularly, often, wearing your mask and getting vaccinated. The proof point is that vaccinated people are least likely to die. I didn't mean that they won't die. Or and even if they get sick, you know, hospitalized, that kind of thing, it just decreases the likelihood, but it doesn't rule out the likelihood. And I think I know where you're going, John, because I was on the edge of my seat when he said that General Powell died of COVID. He did not. It was the word, he left out the word complication.
Exactly, exactly. Wow. Well, and any context around the complications. Now, we're gonna give you the full context, but seems like something you'd want to say when talking about somebody dying from that. But while he did acknowledge Powell's age, he neglected to mention that Powell was immunocompromised, having suffered from multiple myeloma, which means that his immune system was less able to fight off infections, including, by the way, COVID. It's one of the reasons I'm sure that he wanted to get vaccinated to give him the best chance possible. But I want to be very clear, and a lot of people have noted this. He didn't get killed because he got the vaccine, which is like sort of what Tucker seems to be implying. He got killed because too many other people didn't get the vaccine. And so we've decided that 9 months into a readily available free access to the vaccine, there are still tons of COVID just milling about through the country. And so even if you have the vaccine, even if you have a less chance of getting infected, there's still so much of it out there that you might get exposed. And in the end, that's what happened to Powell. It's the last thing that he needed in the condition that he was already in to have an incredibly difficult infection for his system to deal with. Now, he did mention, Tucker eventually mentioned that there were health complications way at the end of the segment. After he'd already moved on, he'd already done other stuff. He pointed out, we left out that Colin Powell was suffering from a number of different health problems. He didn't mention the specifics. He didn't give people the information they needed about him being immunocompromised. But even that acknowledgement that he'd left something crucial out, he used to say this. But of course, that's the point. Vaccinating the vulnerable is so people with other underlying health problems won't die of COVID. Unfortunately, that didn't work in the case of General Powell, and it didn't work for many thousands of others. And that's the point we're making in the first place. No, the point you're making is that unless something offers 100% perfect ironclad gold-plated protection, there's no point in doing that. That is the only takeaway that a regular Fox viewer is going to take from that segment. It didn't save him. Thousands are dying. What's the point? He is trying to disarm his viewers from protecting and safeguarding the lives of themselves and their loved ones. And that is what he has been doing from the very beginning, whether it's about masks or socially distancing or lockdowns or reopening gyms or indeed vaccination. It is always advocating for COVID over his own viewers.
And he's going to continue to do it because it gets him the clicks that he wants. It's sensational. He's just fine. And John, you and I have talked about this many, many times, as has our other colleagues on TYT. We bet you he's vaccinated.
100%.
Right.
100%. I'll bet every dollar I have that ain't that much of a risk because I don't have that many, but definitely he is vaccinated. Now, Tucker Carlson decided to use Colin Powell not only to push vaccine skepticism, but also just a grab bag of other things. Take a look at this video.
Toward the end of his life, Powell sometimes said that his remarkable career was proof that affirmative action worked. But it always seemed like a half-hearted talking point. Anyone who knew Powell personally can confirm that he was as impressive as any person in the US government, and far more than most of them. He was legitimately smart, deeply knowledgeable about the world. He was openly patriotic. He was hardly a diversity hire.
But I saw that and it just made me so mad. And I saw your face when you heard him use the term affirmative action. What were you thinking?
Well, I can't necessarily say it because we might get booted off, but it has too many more than four letter words in it. You know, again, he is stoking, painting people as the other and people as undeserving, you know, merit. You know, did he deserve, not deserve, who deserves, not deserves? He wasn't a hire because he was a black man. That's what Tucker should have just go ahead, if he had to had the test and the fortitude, to just go ahead and say that, because that is exactly what he meant to say. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna just say it for him. Yes, General Powell was, you know, hardworking, worked himself up the rank. Yeah, he did. He wasn't a diversity hire. Again, painting black people and other people of color as somehow they can't or we can't achieve something based on our skills and abilities. It has to be something extra special. But what he doesn't talk about is the extra special hiring that has gone on in this country for a very long time and is still going on in this country. And guess what? It was based on white maleness with money. Mm-hmm. Land owning white maleness. And in the 21st century, it is about your wealth, being ultra, ultra wealthy, because not just wealth. So he never wants to talk about that kind of stuff. But this is his bread and butter, John. This is what he does. And he does it very 100%. Well. Because people believe him when he's saying this stuff. He couldn't just give the man, just give him credit. You had to throw that he's not a diversity hire, as if every other black person or person of color or woman, for that matter, is some kind of diversity hire.
Yep. Yeah. I'm sure what Colin Powell would have liked is for him to be used to degrade millions of other black men and women. And that is what Tucker used him for, because you're right. He knows his audience. And his audience wants that. They hate anything having to do with affirmative action or anything. And so Tucker Carlson does what he's going to do, which is give them an entirely fictional, made up idea of what affirmative action actually is and what reality is. And the reason I think this is worth focusing on, at least briefly, is I want people to understand that while I can't necessarily suss out how much of the thing you just saw there, which we see in a lot of people, Ben Shapiro does this every day, is stupidity and a lack of ability to understand the world, or just outright dishonesty. In all likelihood, it's a mix of two. It's stupidity and dishonesty. Because what he just said is diversity hires are hired instead of people who are better. Affirmative action is about putting someone in who's not as good as the other people you could have who are not diverse. And I know that because he said Colin Powell didn't need that, he was better. But that's not what any of this is about. Tucker Carlson either believes or would have you believe that hiring was always honest and fair. And so what we needed then was affirmative action to get all these lazy, stupid slackers and we lift them up, rather than affirmative action being about correcting the already established centuries long bias against a variety of different classes, colors, creeds of people, and all of that, which is the truth. And so again, I don't know if it's stupidity or dishonesty, but Tucker Carlson would have you believe, and he definitely knows his audience wants to believe, that it has always been fair, that there has never been any discrimination. And it's not that we can debate how much discrimination, was it 5%, was it 50%, was it whatever, it never existed in any way. And if you believe that, if you could look out at America today, 5 years ago, 50 years ago, and say it was always perfectly fair, there was never an advantage to being white, never advantage to being straight, never advantage to being male, whatever, insert whatever you want, then you fundamentally are out of your goddamn mind and you don't understand anything about this country. How could we trust anything about your evaluation of American politics, society, culture, if you can't recognize that? But all of the most prominent voices on the right either can't or want you to believe that they can't.
Yeah, and he wants to talk about people separate. I mean, that his that very segment was nothing but trying to separate people. That's what Tucker Carlson does the best. And he has the market on it. I'm telling you, he really does. He is very good at that. But what you laid out is the absolute, we have to face our history as a nation and a world. Just face it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And just because certain things are a reality today does not mean they have to be a reality tomorrow. But we cannot delude ourselves that a type of affirmative action has always happened in this country and is still happening in this country right now, today.
Yeah, 100%. They want to continue, like they just desperate for people to have the same racism of the previous generations. And it's probably gonna work. It's probably gonna work because it's not just Fox News, you know, and Tucker Carlson's 70-year-old audience. It's the Ben Shapiro's and the Dave Rubens and the Matt Walsh's and the Steven Crowder's and all of that. They know that there's a lot of really insecure, generally men who are white out there, and they desperately want to believe that any deficiency in themselves, any lack of achievement, has nothing to do with them. It has to do with this system that is inherently biased against them. And it's out there, and they're watching it. And we're going to be dealing with the ramifications of that in politics for decades.
For a long time. And it's not just Republicans either, John. No, we're moving on.
No, 100%. You're totally right. You're totally right.
Some of these so-called woke folks, they do the same thing. Look what just happened to India Walton. I know you saw that, where the chair of the New York State Democratic Party compared India Walton's campaign to that of compare her candidacy to that of David Duke.
Really? Oh, and don't worry, we're gonna be talking about that. I knew you were gonna have thoughts on that. You're 100% right. I sometimes broad brush. It ain't just the Republican Party. It's literally everyone to one degree or another. Yeah. In any event, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about the new congressional map that was just unveiled for Texas. It's a doozy. And then we'll be talking about India Walton, actually, after this. I think I know how Anna was talking about wizards. I think there was an international story about like New Zealand's like state wizard got fired or something. I'm gonna have to look it up. I don't know what Anna was talking about there. Anyway, I do have some exciting stuff coming up for you to know about, though, including that, you know, right after we do the show today, we normally, that's when we film our interviews. And I'm going to be talking with Kobe Bachelor, an organizer for IATSE. IATSE is the big union out here for people who work in TV and film and all that. They've just come to some sort of agreement. And so we're going to be talking about that. Originally, we were going to have Kobe on to talk about the possibility of a strike, which, you know, we can't still rule out, but they've reached some agreement. So we're going to be breaking it down and getting the experience of you know, someone who's been working in this industry in a lot of different capacities. So that should be fun. And in addition, we have a new show coming up on Wednesday, a new Twitch exclusive show, The Twitchuation Room. Can you guess who's hosting that? No, you see her right there. That delightful image of Francesca and Tuxedo Chitty herself, The Twitchuation Room, will be coming up Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/TYT. Basically, shorthand, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, just be at Twitch. You got reactions, you got Galaxy Brain, you got the Twitchuation Room, you got a lot of fun stuff coming up, so don't miss it. Okay, with that said, we've got some big important news to talk about, so let's jump right into this. The redistricting process nationwide continues. We've got the map and the effects of the map for Texas, and it is basically exactly what you would have expected. The Republicans were in complete control of the redistricting process, and they've designed a map that will tighten their hold on diversifying parts of the state where the party's grip on power was waning and lock in the GOP's majority in the 38-seat delegation for the US House. By the way, it's not just that they get to change the districts because of population changes. They got two additional House seats. And that's the most of any state in this year's reapportionment. And though Texas received those districts because of explosive population growth, 95% of it attributable to people of color, Republicans opted to give white voters effective control of both. Here's the most amazing thing. So this is a state that is increasingly diverse. The white population has been shrinking. They're going to end up, by the way, with probably 25 Republicans, 13 Democrats in a state that went 52.1% for Donald Trump. He got 2 percentage points more than half. They get almost exactly double the congressional representation. And that's just the raw numbers. We're gonna turn to the racial component of this. And there are some numbers here that are gonna make your blood boil in how racially discriminatory this redistricting process is. But Nina Turner, we know there's bills that would stop this sort of thing from happening, the For the People Act and all that. And I guess we're just not gonna do it. Democrats have control and they're just not gonna use it. And so they have given their implicit stamp of approval on Texas doing what it's gonna do.
Yeah, no, they definitely have. And what really galls me is we saw this coming. There has been a backlash against voting rights and voter security and expansion of the franchise even before Senator Obama became President Obama, but especially after he became President Obama. Go and check the receipts and the records. This backlash has been swift and deep. And the fact that we all knew, especially those of us who have served or are serving in elected office, that 2010, you know, that was a census year, redraw the lines in 2011, the Republicans had control of most legislatures in the United States of America, as they still do today. But what I cannot understand is if the Democratic apparatus knew that 2020 was going to come, and then 2020 census year, 10 years later, and 2021, for the love of God, why did we not invest the requisite money into building up a bench of people who could run and win, but especially run to try to change the dynamics of state legislatures all across the daggone country, so that at least we could blunt some of this stuff. John, I was in the Ohio Senate in 2010 and I voted against the Ohio maps. You know why? Because of gerrymandering. Because it did not serve the people, it served politicians. And we find ourselves right back in this place in 2020, now 2021, with Republicans being able to draw the lines. I don't know. I kind of saw this coming, John.
Yeah, you did. And I love having you here because, like, as you said, you've actually been through this. And we knew it, and it's happening. So like think about Texas in particular in this time, and we'll get to the racial component in a moment. So we have a national movement of red hat wearers that are sure that political power is being stolen and that you can't trust elections. And you have Texas, which passed a bill to try to make it as hard for generally non-white Republican voters, carefully selected, to be able to vote. And they're stealing congressional seats from them by just like carving out bits of Austin and bits of Houston and throwing it into a rural area. And they know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. And none of that is stealing the election, making it harder for one side to vote effectively, taking the representation through computer model gerrymandering. All of that is perfectly acceptable. There aren't gonna be any cyber ninjas. There aren't gonna be any audits, but that is how you steal a majority. You might not steal the presidency that way, but you might well steal control of the House. And so then you also have the racial component. So the Latino population in Texas has grown by 1.98 million, the white population by just 187,000. So you can see where the growth is going. Now, I want you to take a look at not just that they didn't give the representation to the people who are actually increasing the diversity of the state, they actually dialed it back. The number of districts with black residents as the majority of eligible voters dropped from 1 to 0. Texas used to have one. It doesn't have one anymore, despite the growth in the population. In the final map, Republicans reduced the number of districts in which Hispanics make up the majority of eligible voters from 8 to 7, meaning the state would have 23 districts with a white majority among eligible voters, up from 22 currently. By the way, so 7 for Hispanic, 0 for black, 23 for white. The population in Texas, according to the most recent census, white and Hispanic is almost identical. 23 to 7. That's what you do. You like it, like people talk about like Texas getting blue. Like, first of all, that's you're assuming a lot about what people are gonna support or whatever. But if you're just talking about like the size of a population, think about how much they can manipulate this. They can take a state that they win basically half the vote in and take double the representation, and then they can allocate that representation twice as big to one population as another, despite the fact that their population is exactly the same. And all of this is legal, except that we have the opportunity at the national level to do something about it, but that would require actually changing the filibuster, and a couple of senators don't want to do that, so we don't do it. So if you live in Texas, you're already being suppressed in 7 different ways. If you're Hispanic or black living in Texas, you're gonna be suppressed even more than you were previously, which was already unacceptable. And this is what we get, Nina. The Supreme Court's not gonna do anything. Voting Rights Act is done. There's not gonna be any new legislation. So this is the new reality in Texas, likely.
Texas and trust and believe that other Republicans will try to follow this model. I just know Tucker's gonna talk about this social engineering that's going on. This how unfair what is happening in Texas is. I just know it, John. He's gonna watch us today. He's gonna talk about that tonight. The absolute reality here is that this is a stain on democracy, and that we collectively must do something about it, starting with those folks in the Congress. And doing away with the filibuster is a awesome start, which they are, you know, don't have the stomach to do it. And I'm not so sure that even the president does, because he hedges on it too much for me. Also, yeah, we need to make the requisite investments so that people can run. You know what? Another 10 years is coming, I guess, if Mother Earth doesn't implode, because we don't want to do a damn thing about climate change. But I digress. Let's assume another 10 years will come, and I believe that they will. Where are we going to be 10 years from now?
Yeah.
It is time to start planning right now. I mean, the vote is, I mean, they are just even before anybody casts a ballot, they're already not just pre-planning. The outcome of those elections are already predetermined because of the way that these people are drawing the lines. And that's what we need people to understand. You know, I got a quote here. I've been done by Amelia Boykins Robinson, and she said, a voteless people is a homeless people. Basically, the vote, the majority of the people are not going to ever run for office. But where we do are supposed to be the most equal is when we cast our vote. How can that be when you have people just using, as you said, now it's not even the power to pee and the power of the computer, because gerrymandering has always happened, but it is much more sinister, much more exact with computer generated gerrymandering. 100%. How in the world are people ever going to be able to have some control or let their voices be heard when you have politicians manipulating the process before they ever cast the ballot? Something is wrong, John. It's been wrong for a very long time, but it is getting worse.
Yep, and we're supposed to have some politicians that actually care to do something about it, and we unfortunately really don't. Like, they're just not, like, Sinema doesn't care about this. Like, Manchin doesn't care about this. They don't care at all, and they're the Democrats, supposedly.
And there's no consequence either for them not caring. Let's put that out there. They become exactly a household name. They get called into the White House for a conversation. People fawning all over them. What will they do? What will they decide?
Yeah.
You know, where have we been into the moderates, into the corporatist wing of the Democratic Party? Yeah. I just don't get it.
Yeah. And by the way, like, if I knew that we were definitely gonna lose a majority, I would do something with that time. And by the way, they're not doing anything, so they were gonna lose it anyway. But after this, and after other states get through with this, forget about it. Like, and that's how it works. The Republicans do not need to get more popular. They don't need more voters to support them. They don't need to come up with any sort of platform. In 2020, they literally didn't have a platform. There was nothing. They weren't advocating for anything. And they won't be in 2022, they won't be in 2024. Sure, they'll demonize immigrants, they'll talk about how you should have more guns or whatever, like a cannon on your front lawn. But they literally do not need to become more popular because they have computer models that just deliver them a majority anyway. And by the way, there was one little note. I was going on Twitter and seeing people's reaction to this. And there were a bunch of Republicans sort of debating, was this good enough? Because a lot of Republicans online feel like this wasn't an aggressive enough map, because it balanced stealing districts with protecting incumbents rather than just stealing as many districts as possible. But some liked it, and there was a fun little tidbit. So one rando said, D's are being far more aggressive with their gerrymandering in blue states than R's are. R's seem to be acting very lackadaisical, while D's are brutally drawing out every last R that they can in blue states. By the way, are the Democrats gonna be doing some gerrymandering? Yes, and I would also ban that. Ban all of it, ban it for the Democrats, ban it for the Republicans. But I love the idea that, like, they literally just took like the entire Hispanic population of Texas and said, screw you, you get nothing. And that's lackadaisical. But anyway, I love the response to that person even more. Andrew said, every vulnerable incumbent in Texas is now in a safe seat, maybe likely for Nels. And we can pick off an RGV seat while giving Cuellar a fighting chance in a primary too. That's a good map. Look at that. So they're all talking about, they Cuellar's a Democrat. But they're like, we came up with a map that I think he can beat off a progressive challenger. These are Republicans. And they like are so glad that Cuellar might be benefited by that map. Like, I know it's just a rando or whatever, but I found that to be amazing, Nina.
But of course they are, because these corporatist Dems will do anything, fight their own mama to stop a progressive. I mean, that's what this comes down to. So I am not surprised about that. Republicans played a long game too. I mean, it's one thing to concentrate on the Congress and the presidency. No doubt, those offices are vitally important, especially if we're gonna get some folks in there that's really, really, really gonna serve the people. Asterisk. However, we cannot continue to turn our back on state legislatures and think that we are going to advance the causes for humanity or the democratic values that we say we ascribe to if we don't make investments in state legislatures. Government closest to the people, the place that we are losing the most ground. And not to say we lose a lot of ground on the federal level, don't get me wrong, but the most ground is being lost that has generational impact the most often is on the state level of government. And so Democrats need to get a clue, they need to get it real quick, that we have got to plan for the long term in the same way that the Republicans do. They say, hey, would the Republicans rather have control of the Congress? Absolutely. Would they rather have control of the presidency? Absolutely. But you know what they say to Democrats? Go ahead, y'all can have this for a little while, because we gonna have most of the 50 states.
Yeah. Okay, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna take our second break. We come back, we're gonna be talking about the SCOTUS decision on qualified immunity. Not good news, just gonna let you know that. And then we'll have that story on India Walton after this. Okay, everybody, we got too much to talk about, so let's jump right into it. The Supreme Court has weighed in on qualified immunity, sort of hoping they would at some point, but unfortunately it didn't go in the right direction. They've ruled in favor of police officers in two different cases involving qualified immunity. That, by the way, is the series of legal precedents that protect government officials, including police officers, accused of violating constitutional rights. And isn't it amazing when the government has baked in protections to protect people who violate your constitutional rights? It almost makes you think they're not rights if the government is allowed to violate them however they want. Anyway, the court overturned lower court decisions without ordering full briefing and argument. Assignment didn't see them as close calls. There were no dissents. Now, previously, Sotomayor and Clarence Thomas had criticized qualified immunity. I guess not anymore. I guess it was unanimous. In this particular case, the two cases involved police officers accused of using excessive force. In one, officers used beanbag rounds and a knee on the suspect's back to subdue him. In the second, officers shot and killed a suspect after he approached them while raising a hammer. And so this was an opportunity for the Supreme Court to weigh in on qualified immunity, and they have. They've not only just not, like, it'd be one thing if they were just like, just leave it be. They upheld it, overturning lower courts that were willing to question qualified immunity, Nina Turner. And it looks like not only do we not get any legislation over the past year, the Supreme Court clearly is on the side of the status quo for more police brutality.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth about again, this goes back to the Congress, the Supreme Court. I am not surprised about what happened at the Supreme Court, but what is happening in that Congress right now, the George Floyd Act, hadn't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then when they were talking about, because they're not even talking about it anymore. When they were talking about it, they stopped talking about qualified immunity. And then when they did bring it up, I think it was Congressman Clyburn who said, well, you know, we could pass a bill without it, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So that was the telltale sign right there. And then the negotiations that were going on in the Senate, as you recall, between Senator Scott and also Senator Booker, just absolutely went nowhere. Surprise, surprise, surprise. So yeah, we have to elect more people who are willing to absolutely challenge the status quo. And doing away with qualified immunity does not hurt good law enforcement individuals. I need people to understand that. But you know what? Having people who took an oath to protect and serve just be able to use violence and force any way that they see fit without a consequence is wrong, and it makes law enforcement less safe because people are scared and they do not trust. And yeah, it's just, so I'm not surprised by the Supreme Court. They're following the lead of the Congress.
Exactly. Yeah, nothing. Just, you know, like, it's so frustrating because, like, you know, look, people tend towards apathy, and Americans more so than others. But in this case, we had the biggest social movement of our lives, sustained for months. When it is hard to get something sustained for a week, they did it for months. They did it across the country. They did it despite being brutalized by cops in the streets, despite, you know, infiltration by Boogaloo boys trying to start race wars and all that. But they did it. And I'm not saying nothing got done, because you never know. I mean, maybe you have a Cori Bush eventually that comes out of the movement. Maybe you have people who run and win in elections. But Congress has decided, hey, we did our photo with traditional African garb, you know, we renamed a street, everybody. Ooh. What more do you want out of us? And ooh, now the Supreme Court's like, we're gonna do less.
Yeah. Don't get me started about that garb stuff. Lord have mercy. That was one of the saddest moments in Congress, as far as I'm concerned, to see them put on that and then kneel and do all that foolishness. Meanwhile, Kaepernick took all the hell. Yep. Took all the hell to really stand up against systems within the NFL, which reflects systems within our larger country. I mean, we could do a whole show on just this topic alone. Yep. Supreme Court, very disappointing decision, unless maybe they know something we don't know, John. Maybe they do on this, I don't know.
Doubt it.
But the fact that the Congress is not acting.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna return to the team. We're gonna return to that photo after this next break, but we don't have much time. So let's move ahead to the D block for right now, and we're gonna jump into this video.
Is it always a requirement of a Democratic elected official, or perhaps the state chair or party chairs? Is it a requirement that if someone wins the Democratic primary, they must always get the Democratic endorsement of these people? And that question I would answer, no, it's not. Look, let's take a scenario very different, where David Duke, you remember him, the grand wizard of the KKK, he moves to New York, he becomes a Democrat, and he runs for mayor in the city of Rochester, which has a low primary turnout, and he wins the Democratic line. I have to endorse David Duke? I don't think so. Now, of course, India Walton isn't in the same category, but it just leads you to that question, is it a must? It's not a must. It's something you choose to do. That's why it's an endorsement. Otherwise, they call it something else, like a requirement.
You know what also isn't a must? Comparing someone to the head of the KKK. When you say they're not in the same category, and yet you put them in the category, that's not a must. That's a choice you made, to use his terminology there, Nina. That's madness. New York Democratic leader comparing a black woman to David Duke.
Very easily it rolled off his tongue, sisters and brothers, family and friends, very easily. Because you know what? It's okay. He knows there will not be a real consequence for being able to say that. And not only a black woman who has been fighting, you know, year after year for equality and justice for the people where she lives, but she won the Democratic primary. She is the flipping Democratic nominee. But you know what? She is also a self-declared Democratic socialist.
Yep.
So she doesn't fit nice and neatly into their box. He need to come on out and tell that kind of truth. They don't want to endorse her nor support her because she is a Democratic socialist. And basically they said the hell with the fact that she's the Democratic nominee and won the votes in the city of Buffalo during the primary. She is not the right kind of Democrat. I am so, you know what? Because I just experienced that. Mm-hmm. John, as you know.
Oh, 100%.
And the Dragon Squad knows, just experienced that and was told by people who were on the inside, listening to the people having these conversations, that the power structure, made it very clear that I was not the right kind of Democrat either. And we know the kind of people that are making donations to the incumbent who lost the primary and is mounting a write-in campaign are some of the same types of people who endorsed or supported my opponent too in the primary. But the difference is here, India Walton won the primary. And let me, because you know, the man, eventually he apologized, but it took him a long time to get there. Because he said, well, you know, look, basically I said what I said. And then he got the call. And then he said, I apologize. But I think that the public advocate, Jermoni Williams, I just want to read his quote. And he said this. He said, Jermoni Williams, public advocate in New York. He said, I did not expect the chair of the New York State Democratic Party to compare the Democratic nominee for mayor of Buffalo, a black woman who has spent years fighting for her city, to a neo-Nazi grand wizard of the KKK. Hello, somebody. And we know lots of other people made quotes and all of that, but it took him a little too long to get to an apology. But there's something that I do agree with him on. You know what? He said that you don't have to endorse who comes out of the primary. You know what, John? I hope progressives are listening, because they gave us hell. What?
Yep.
You're not gonna endorse the person that came out of the primary? Shame on you. You guys are divisive, right?
What happened to unity?
Yeah.
What happened to unity?
What happened to
unity? I thought we were supposed to unify. Weird how that works out.
I mean, this is racialized. This is that example that we were talking about, that you don't just have to be a Republican. Mm-hmm. This right here, because he knows that nothing really is going to happen to him for making this kind of comment. And it was in his heart.
Yeah, it was too easy. It was too smooth. He wanted to.
He did.
But yeah, you're right. Like we'll get to some of the other comments.
And I endorsed her too. I was in Buffalo with her down about 2 weeks ago now, going door to door. She had a big rally, a big crowd. Zephyr Teachout was there. I mean, a whole host of people were there. I believe she is going to win this race, but look at the hail she got to catch. And she won the nomination, for God's sake. Yeah. She won the primary. Imagine if if I mounted a write-in campaign. Can you imagine that?
God, no. They would not allow it. They would not allow it. Yeah. Anyway. To the audience, we've spoken with India Walton. The interview is up on the channel if you want to find out more information about the write-in challenge that that Byron Brown is waging and all that. I just want to show you one more thing, and that was the response from India Walton on Twitter. Using this meme of corporate Democrats seeing a black working class mother fighting to ensure everyone has housing, healthy food, and clean drinking water. Is this the KKK? That's pretty good. I love that. India Walton has had to deal with a lot, both in her life before running for office, and now she does this amazing thing. She represents this amazing possibility for the party, and they spit in her face. And so, insult to injury. Anyway. That's the end of our first hour. Thank you for watching on our linear platforms. If you're on Twitch or YouTube, there is more coming. We're going to take a short break, but there'll be more news after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.